guys, I'm Kristen and this is Carla.
Hi.
Join us as we explore origin stories and fun facts or something. Hello, my friend.
Hello. I'm just frantically trying to fix my hair and I'm like, must I do this during the intro?
Yes.
We already had sound problems this morning. Like, we don't need more.
We always need more sound problems.
Always.
Well, hey, this sounds way better than, remember, our first few episodes? By few, I mean like the first 10 episodes. The sound was like insane.
I know. It's pretty tragic. It's, and I'm so like, how painful. Is anybody going to stick with us if like...
Nobody, you know, is.
We should almost like release one of our newer episodes, like somehow...
Yeah, earlier. Put like
earlier.
We should. We should just re-record. We'll write the transcript out of the first
Taylor Swift
episode.
Style.
What? She did
like
that?
Like how she has to re-record all her stuff because that Scooter Braun guy was an a-hole and like bought her whole catalog or whatever or sold it.
Oh my god, I didn't know anything about that.
What?
I'm not very up to date on Taylor Swift. I just...
Hey,
like,
me neither, but like at the same time...
Apparently you
attention.
Are.
I'm an entertainment news junkie. And I still read BuzzFeed and I'm like all in it.
I always get trapped on when I'm on Facebook, which is not very often, but I always... click on the stuff like the total clickbait of like, oh, this article, the 10 people who were in a relationship while they were filming, and it's like
right?
Just the most boring people.
I know.
Nothing makes me feel older though than like reading those stories now and not knowing like 90% of who
oh
these people are. I'm like, oh my god, I
and sadly
so
I don't
old.
Know why, but I kind of sort of know to an extent who they are because I like love entertainment news because I like to empty my brain of like, you know,
yeah,
anything serious or negative. And I'm like, this is great. And then, so I'll know like the new little pop stars and like the YouTubers and that kind of thing. But then
yeah.
I'm at that age where I'm like, I don't want to know this. I don't care. You go live your lives. Like I'm starting to let go of like, and it's not a fear of missing out. I don't feel like I'm going to feel old if I stop following these young things,
yeah.
Right? It's just you absorb it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like that joke on what was it? That Kimmy Schmidt, I think, where they all know stuff about the Kardashians and they don't know why. They're like, how do I know that?
But like, that's the thing, like,
it's just there,
yeah.
Right?
And it's so strange. That's why it's so strange to me when there are like massive gaps because. I agree. Like, I know some of, like, the really younger generation, like, YouTubers. Mm-hmm. There's some people because I've just kind of run across information about them.
Yeah, yeah.
Wherever, right?
Yeah.
But I have huge gaps of, like, missing information. And they're, like, older people now. Like, there's a whole, like, section of music time that I didn't follow any of what was new and happening because it
Me
just
either.
Wasn't my style. Like, Cardi B, I don't know. Like, I know of her and I... know kind of what she looks like. I could not
tell
you one of her songs.
Me neither.
Like, there's, like, this, it's such a, it's almost like this, like, black hole of stuff there. Like, I just don't know anything about that time period of music at all.
And
I'm, like,
and
pretty
no
in the know
the
about other stuff.
At the time, or, like, you know, of those moments. It's
no.
just, it's not something that gets into your brain, right? Like, there's a lot
yeah.
of, you know.
Because I'm
like,
sure if I listen to that, so like I've had it a few times where I've listened to something that's older and I'm like, oh, that's actually a pretty good song or whatever. And it's like, oh,
yeah.
that's who that person is or
yeah.
that's what, like, I had this totally different idea of who they were in my head. Like, it just was something that did not exist.
It's and it's
like,
weird to me that old bands that like were kind of around during like when, you know, the height of our concert going days
yeah.
and our, like music, indie mania, they're all coming back. So like... The Yeah Yeah Yeahs and Interpol and
Interpol's coming back.
Yeah, they have released
what?
Some new songs. Yeah, they're going
oh.
on tour and everything. Like even
Not
Modest
Interpol.
Mouse and like
yeah.
Arcade Fire, and it's just like so weird because I'm growing up with these bands. Like, of course they're not just gonna stop making music because they're not
but
20
it's
anymore.
So because they were brand new when we were like at that age.
Yeah.
Like our
yeah.
early 20s when we were like, hey, like
yeah,
totally
so it's
into
kind
that.
Kind of nice that they're still
yeah.
there because then I'm like, okay, so I don't feel entirely but it's obsolete still, in a way.
It still, in my mind, makes me feel like they're, like, the new band. Like, I would never look at Arcade Fire like they were, like, I looked at U2 back in the day where I'm like, they've been around for forever. They're this mainstay. They're this thing that's been around for 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But they have been, like, I still view them as, like, this new indie band that nobody knows about. And I'm like, that's not the case at all. But
like, if you think about it, U2 was around, like, for about 40 years, I think.
Yeah.
Career-wise, right? And then, like, Arcade Fire, what, 20?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw something the other day about, like, oh, it's 20 years or it's been 10 years since this album came out. And I was like, what the hell? Like, that's...
I know.
Their new album. Like, and it was so weird.
And there's some new ones, like, groups and this and that, like, you know, that I... But it's weird because it's like my brain doesn't even want to give them a chance. Or it's kind of like, I'll be like, I'll acknowledge, yeah, this is a nice tune, but I don't get all, like, into it.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't seek it out at all.
No,
it's like
neither.
This, like, I think then, as I've gotten older, I've, like, lost a lot of curiosity about that stuff, which is weird. Which is,
yeah, right?
Because you'd think that that curiosity would just stay. I don't know.
And I feel like, I don't like getting too nostalgic either about music. I realize that I used to, but now it's probably like an age thing where it's like, I don't want to feel old, even though that's not usually a problem for, I don't know, right?
Yeah.
It's like this whole
messed up thing.
But then the only thing I'm exposed to lately is just kind of like pop style music, because that's all that's really out there. So
yeah.
I'm like really liking some Harry Styles songs where I'm like, Harry Styles?
Oh my God. Please don't tell me that's that Watermelon Sugar song. It's the worst song. I hate it so much. And it came on because
it, for a pop kid that was like from One Direction, I was pleasantly surprised.
True.
And I can sort of like jam to it or whatever.
Yeah. It just irritates the crap out of me. Old people do.
I can see how it would be. His songs are a bit repetitive. Like, but there's that one.
It's just such stupid lyric. Watermelon Sugar. I hate it. The idea of it is so stupid to me.
Yeah.
To be fair,
most pop songs are incredibly stupid.
Yeah, lyrics, but that one's more than anything. Like, even though
like
it does have a good
Beret,
tune.
Come on.
Yeah, that's true. That's something that I never understood. It's like, why? Yeah. I mean, I'm
like,
not going
to
talk shit about
song.
Prince right now.
My mom's
but it's
been
like
listening to Prince, and like, I can't get behind Purple Rain. I just
I can't get behind any of it.
I sing Purple Rain really. What? Raspberry Beret is
no,
iconic.
I mean, like, it's fine. It's a
no,
good song,
it's
and
epic.
I'll sing along to them.
It's genius.
It's not. I don't see any of it as genius. I'm sorry. I can't. I'm sure. I'm not denying that, like, he's a good musician, obviously, but, like, I don't understand why he's viewed as something. I would love for somebody to explain
either.
It to me.
You know, I think that's, yeah, like, I don't know.
I'm open to learning about it.
Talking to about this, but I just watched, it's on Netflix, a documentary about this Rolling Stone music, I guess, critic?
Okay.
Writer guy. And he said, like, one of the most kind of underappreciated people, like, who had such a huge influence on music at the time was Ray Charles.
Oh.
And that really took me a moment because I'm really into older music, right? Classic rock and like I was obsessed with like following like, you know, all the music festivals, Woodstock and everything growing up, right? It was like,
Mr.
Ray
Otis
Charles never
Redding.
Really, yeah. Yeah. And I'll appreciate, right? Like we know like Otis Redding and like, I just was shocked because Ray Charles, like maybe because when we were kids, it was like, oh, he's the blind piano player guy.
I think
he was reduced to that basically.
Well, and
with
I think because he was a little bit more mainstream, known in a little bit more of a mainstream way, in my mind. Like, most people knew who Ray Charles was,
but
I couldn't really tell you what
was
songs
this iconic
he had.
In terms of like actual, like, you know.
Right, right, right.
I knew he was talented. I'm just.
No,
kind of,
I agree.
Right? It's just mind blowing where you're like, wait. It's kind of like Dolly Parton, where she
Dolly Parton
is Dolly.
So much.
Yeah, but I didn't grow up with her music, so I didn't actually know how incredibly, like, mind-blowingly beautiful some of her songs are.
You know
her
what
older songs.
I What I really need to do actually is go and listen to like all of her songs.
That's
because
I never did that. I grew up with best of CDs.
Yeah, I grew up with the best of Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers CD that my mom played whenever she was cleaning the house. So to this day, if I need to get into the mood to like really do like a spring clean, I will blast that Islands in the Stream through the whole house to get myself motivated.
Right. No, it's true. Like Queen, I only had the two best of CDs, the classic Queen, and it just hit me. I'm like, I don't know a lot of people's music, and it's really, it kind of, after watching that Rolling Stone thing, I'm like, that's depressing. Like,
you know what's crazy is that I did not grow up at all with the Beatles. Like, my parents didn't listen to the Beatles at all. So I had like zero. We didn't even have that. I couldn't, I knew like some of the key songs that obviously were Beatles, like you know that they are. But when I watched that Yesterday movie, which I only watched maybe a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Like Greg's a big Beatles fan or like knows the Beatles a lot more. And so we're watching that movie and I'm like, what song is like I didn't know most of the songs because they actually, in my mind, play a few of the like more obscure songs, like not the like classic five songs that everybody knows from the Beatles, right? Like they play more songs, obviously. And I was like, this is a Beatles song? Whoa, that's like shocking. Or, you know, like I actually learned a lot. I'm like, man, I really need to like sit down and give their music a good listen.
Especially because, for me, the later stuff where like that, what's that song? That Get Back song, the JoJo lyric.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with that song as a kid. It was so good. I'm like, what is this? And I couldn't wrap my head around the fact that that was the Beatles. I'm like, no, that's not the Beatles. Like, and then it skips to right away from kind of the old typical cheesy classics from the Beatles to John Lennon.
Yeah.
At no point.
Totally. There's no in between.
Brainwashed with the good stuff. I'm like, you guys.
But you know what I just said to Greg the other day was that I wonder if people who were big Beatles fans, like, because they, you know, they are known for having that big following, like, people went crazy, right?
Yeah.
And, like, I wonder if everybody was pissed off that they suddenly changed their style so much. Like, they went from kind of, like, boy band to, like, kind of hard rock. Not hard rock, but, like, pretty rock and roll, like, you know,
intense. I don't think so, because think about Arcade Fire, right? Like, they have the new album. And it's actually, all their albums are quite different. Like, I'm really, I love bands that, like,
I was surprised that everybody hated the last one. Yeah.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. This one I actually don't like as much as a whole.
I haven't listened to the whole thing.
Although, as a whole, I have to give them credit. They are one of the best bands ever for, like, making a proper full album where if you listen from beginning to end, it's a whole story. Not to be cheesy and over the top here, but it's
nobody
true.
Does that anymore though. We never do listening parties.
I know, but there's a lot of songs I actually don't like, really don't like on this album. But like, I'm not gonna bash it. Like, there's no way, because it's still a good song. I can see how other people will love it, right? But I was thinking about it and I'm like, I'm not mad that they changed their sound. I'm not mad if I don't like one of their albums. I like it. It means they're good.
But it's like when I was saying that about the Beatles, I was like, because I know with you too that there are the people that are diehard, like, oh, you two changed. Like, Joshua Tree was like the end of, like, when they were listening to them. And I loved every different phase that you two was in. Like, I loved the pop. I loved Zeropa. Like, I loved that.
Yeah. For me, it stopped, part I think, of it. After all that you, what's the, I can't even say the all title that you, anymore.
Yeah, that, the I kind of later stuff,
but then
entirely.
They had, like, I think their last full album, there were some really beautiful songs on there, right? So I was kind of like, okay, and, you know, but I can't get mad. That's, you know, I think,
it's like a natural progression.
I did get a little mad because it was a little bit repetitive.
Yeah.
Because but I think Joshua it's like anything in life. Acting Baby, come on, that was such a huge change.
Huge change, yeah.
And that's what you need, that bravery. And so Prince, going back to Prince, yes, I don't understand why he was so popular either. There are a lot of songs where I'm like, I can't. What is this? This is like cheesy, whatever. But it moves all these people. But all of his phases were quite different.
Yeah.
It wasn't the
I
same
I think that's
thing.
The thing. I understand that about him, that he was so experimental and like...
Right.
In my mind, I think because I wasn't exposed to him at the time that everything was happening, I think I don't have that same appreciation for the experimental side of it.
But some music you're not really ever going to have an appreciation for. No. Probably, like, for me, R&B, I'm never, it's not going to, like, move me. It's just not my kind of thing. But some, especially the new R&B, like, influence stuff.
Yeah.
Is incredible. Like, a lot of young artists are, like, really getting, you know, the old stuff mixed in. And it's just, like, you can tell that they're making smart music again. Not just like and I'm love it. Like Labyrinth, he does the soundtrack for that Euphoria show with Zendaya.
Oh, okay.
Holy cannolis.
Is like, it good?
So good. He is so, so good. And it's really like stuff I wouldn't normally listen to, kind of, you know, more mainstream sounding, but it's so good. I'm like, damn you, Labyrinth. Anyway.
Oh my gosh. Oh, ooh. Santi Gold came out with a new album. Or is coming out with a new album? Something about her with a new album.
It's like, are you frozen?
Like, no, I actually thought that the recording froze for a second because you didn't move a muscle. But I just thought it was cool because for like around my 30th
birthday,
thought
it was cool. I'm having a heart attack. A new album?
Yeah, I think so. Because I follow her on Instagram and she just released something. So I don't know if it's already out yet. I have to look into it still. But around my 30th birthday, she came out with that Master of My Make Believe, which is like one of my all time favorite albums.
Yeah.
Made by anybody just at any time.
The whole album, yeah.
Yeah. I love that album so much. And I just love the idea behind it. It's so great.
I know. She did have that one that she released where it was kind of like, there are a couple of really fun songs on it, actually.
Yeah, that that 99, where she's like the 99 cent store is like the cover of it.
No. It's called I Don't Want, the Goldfire Sessions.
Oh.
And it was released in 2018. And I have two songs here just right now. But
what's
Run the Road and Valley of the Dolls, the songs.
Oh,
It's called I Don't Want. And then colon, the Goldfire Sessions. But like,
it's her so much. One of the biggest disappointments.
Say Santi Gold. What is it? Santi Gold? I think it's Santi Gold.
I think it's Santi Gold, but I say Santi Gold because I'm a loser.
I really need to get people's names down. Can I just segue quickly into something I was going to talk about? I know we've been blabbing for 10 hours, but, you know, it kind of hit me because people are now trying to, like, stand up and stand up to people in English-speaking countries, like, mostly Canada and America, of, like, you need to learn how to say my name as it's intended to be.
Right.
Pronounced, right? Like,
okay, yeah.
In the, like, the, you know, not, don't anglicize it. Mm-hmm. And they talk about how, like, it was actually pretty traumatic and just, like, why do they have to change who they are and, like, kind of, like, squash down that their culture and that part of them.
Right.
Just so it's easier for an English person to say their name.
Right.
And I completely forgot that during, when I first went to school, I was being, I guess, enrolled or whatever, kindergarten. And my mom said my name in the Polish way, which I can't even say, which is a nightmare, but, and the teacher was like, oh, well, would she prefer, and she anglicized it right away. So she's like, would she prefer Carolina or Carolina? And it wasn't the Polish way at all.
Oh, I'm curious and to I realized, know what the Polish way is now.
Oh, it's, I can't do it.
Because
when
the
like,
L is like a
it's
W
like Carolina.
Sound. Okay, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I can't even say it, so I'm kind of like, thank God I don't have to say my own name. But like, I'm very... I barely speak Polish, right? Like, I'm very English. Came here as a tiny baby, but, like, it just hit me where I'm like, that's, like, even my name, I had that. And it worked out in the way of, like, because I am so English, I guess, right?
Yeah.
But it was kind of sad.
I understand it to a degree of, like, if you actually can't, say, roll your R's in that same way because, you know, physiologically.
But that was my name. It's like my sister, Agnieszka, like she, people can say it. People here learn how to say
it.
But she's Agnes now because it's English, the anglicized thing. I'm like, but that's a part of your culture that you're losing.
I know. I remember her being so shocked when I said it. And I'm like, yeah, that's what your name is, right? And she's like, yeah, how did you say that properly? I'm like, well, I heard you guys say it. And so I tried to say it properly, right? Like, it's not that complicated. I mean, also, like, I think with certain things, like, if you can't roll your R's or something like that, like, okay, fine. It's not going to sound exactly like somebody who speaks that language.
Of course.
It can be as close as it possibly can be, right? Like,
yeah,
you can...
because I know a lot of, like, you know, especially in Asian cultures, they're, they really, they full on have to, like, change completely their names. But I do know a lot of Polish people who just pick a complete, like my uncle, he picked a totally different name, English name for himself. I'm like, but that wasn't your name. Like,
yeah.
But he just, it's easier. I'm like, oh man. But
my mom kept her name when she came over here. Like,
I love it.
Which, but you know, it's caused her a bit of grief because people, it's a very unusual name.
But English names also can cause some grief.
Yeah, right? But if she had anglicized it, like, right. So she would have been like Jackie or something. Can you imagine my mom as a Jackie? Like, that just doesn't fit. It. I mean, I guess we would have if that was what she had gone by, but. I love that she kept her name and like she anglicized. she is kind of sassy. But it, like she did anglicize the spelling of it though, because the way it's spelled in Dutch would be, so her name's Joke, and in Dutch it's a very common name and it would be spelled J-O-K-E.
So here it would be joke.
People would pronounce it like incorrectly all the time, so she changed the spelling to Byoka. So
she could have been Joke or Jack-A.
Oh my god, could you imagine? But everybody thinks that she's Japanese because they think of Yoko Ono right away when they see her name.
Oh,
so she has it all the time where people will be like, "Oh, I thought you were going to be Asian for some reason."
She's like, "Donna Chang from Seinfeld."
Oh my god, Donna Chang. God, that is one of the best episodes ever.
I know. Okay, I could keep talking about this forever, but I think we should just get into it.
Okay.
Oh my goodness.
It's the Carla episode.
And woo-hoo. You guys, you're in for a treat. Because I'm doing an experiment. I've threatened to do this before, and it never really goes how I want it to. This one might work, it might not.
Okay.
I wanted to finally do a presentation that it goes according to how I researched it. Like, so I want to present it as if we're on a journey together.
Okay.
Normally, you think, oh, what's the difference? I will do the research, and then I have to edit like mad and like copy and paste and put group things and organize.
Right.
Yes,
right,
I do organize my work, you guys. Don't. This time, I tweaked a little bit here and there where it was relevant, right? Okay. But it's a fun journey, and it actually kind of worked out. So
cool. Okay. Take us on the journey.
I did not want to research at all. There's nothing new here, right? This is how it all starts, you guys, okay? I'm going to take you on my life as a researcher. And then I even texted you. I'm like, oh, my God, should I ask to get out of this? I really don't want to do this. And I'm like, I need a topic. So it's like the evening before today. So yesterday, everybody. I'm like, I need a topic. And, like, you know the movies when, like, people are trying to think of a fake name? They just look at random objects in the house? Where it's like, you know.
Like lamp rug.
Yeah, lamp rug, yeah. I jokingly was like, oh, I'm going to do picture frames. Because I was staring at a picture frame.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, but I don't actually know where picture frames come from. And I mean, like, awesome. The loose ones. So we're doing picture frames, you guys.
Nice. That's honestly how I come up with most of my topics, where I'm like, oh, like I look at something, I'm like, yeah, where did that actually start? You think, oh, that's so boring, but it's like, wait a second, I don't actually know where that came from.
Right?
Yeah.
If this whole thing is a disaster, let me know in comments on social media or email, but I don't think it'll be very different from what I normally do, so...
I'm excited. Okay. I'm excited to go on this journey.
Okay. So my thinking was, this is how my brain was going, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was making fun of myself for that topic. And then I said, I think it would be something humans would invent pretty early for obvious reasons. Like, look at what I made. Let's make it the focal point of everything, right? Like the kind of that instinct to
like that guy who was like, you know, or like Carla made it or whatever, like naming the towns after them.
Yeah, right. It's that kind of like the ego, right?
Yeah.
There's no shortage of that, right? But I thought, okay, come on, like let's investigate. What is it really?
You go back to like the cave paintings, and they had little frames around the little cave paintings.
Does go back pretty far.
Does it actually? Oh my god.
Okay. So my first stop. You guys are on this journey. This is kind of scary because I actually do organize the hell out of my worst stuff.
I like this. It's fun.
Okay. I didn't even want to research or do a topic, and then I read this sentence. I think I told you. And
yes,
this
you told
is
me.
My
like,
favorite sentence in the whole world. So my first stop. a site, the article's called History of Picture Frames. I'm like, okay, jackpot.
Amazing. Perfect.
Framedestination.com. Thank you.
Oh, Frame Destination. I like it.
For, you know, like sunscreen.com or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. With what,
yeah. And the second sentence in the article is like, it was a jackpot. Okay. So, however, when they were first developed, frames were included in the art and even considered a piece of art themselves. I'm like, okay, here we go. Ooh. Talking about picture frames, right? And then, the best sentence ever. In fact, according to, quote, a survey of frame history, end quote, in Picture Framing Magazine, you guys.
What the hell?
Picture Framing Magazine?
That's like a joke. That's like a joke thing that you would see on a cartoon.
It is a joke thing. But do you know how happy my brain is now? Like, pure joy.
Picture Framing Magazine. Ugh. Jeez. We need to just start a magazine about nothing.
It is, like, right? It's such a, like, obscure. It feels like such a, like,
but see, magazines used to be such a thing.
And it's a magazine.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, any world, any industry has, like, you can do a deep dive into anything, right? Like, I'm sure there's, like, picture framing conventions, picture framing, like, unions. I don't know.
But a magazine?
That is pretty specific.
Like, I was blown away when I discovered that there were, like, magazines devoted just to knitting or gardening, even. Like,
I know,
didn't
right?
even clue in as a kid where I'm like, oh, topical yeah. magazine, but picture frames? That's my whole presentation. The end. So when did humans...
Oh my God. That was... Oh my gosh, we are leaving that in. So we've had like major technical difficulties and like we just started recording. Carla started strong. That was scared me.
Can you pick up on my rage, tech rage?
That was good.
So when did humans come up with the concept of framing their pictures?
Yeah.
If you look back at ancient Egyptian and Greek art, I'm sure some other ancient art, but nobody mentions it because, you know.
They're the only two ancients that existed, apparently.
Yeah. You'll often see artistic borders around murals or on pottery. Well, on lots of things, really.
Yeah.
And often these borders would actually, like, divide or frame sections of scenes. So it was kind of like a way to organize.
Okay.
Like, you know, if there was a myth or something on a vase, it'd be like.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the concept of kind of framing, it's sort of like comic book style where it's like, okay, we need to divide. Like,
yeah.
Crystal clear. Which is kind of funny that humans automatically... Organize it.
Yeah.
They don't do circles. They were always square or linear.
That is interesting.
I guess circles are always hard to draw. No one wants to start with a circle.
And they don't lead, like, because you want it to lead into the next thing. A circle could, like, go anywhere, right? Like, there's no specific direction to a circle necessarily, right?
Yeah, true. One of the earliest physical frames dates back to around 50 to 70 AD. It was a wooden frame which was around the portrait of someone important enough to be entombed, right?
Okay.
So in ancient Egypt. So I'm like,
oh.
One source confused me because it said framed pictures of mummies have been found in Egyptian tombs. I'm like, framed pictures of mummies? Like, why would you word it like that?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a picture of wrapping. Somebody's, like, face is all wrapped up. Who's that? I don't know. But so, of course, I'm going to, like, Google it, make sure that's not what they actually did. So they're also called Fayum mummy portraits. Sorry, I can't pronounce that. They were portraits of upper-class people from Roman Egypt. So it's kind of like... very okay. Roman thing to have these kind of like paintings.
Yeah.
Starting around late 1st century BC or even like the early 1st century AD and onward, the portraits were painted onto wooden boards and you'd call them panels. That's what panel painting, if you hear that, that's usually like how people painted back in the old days. They didn't have canvas quite yet.
Okay.
And these panels covered the faces of the bodies that were mummified. So they'd kind of like wrap it into the mummy and it would be like their face on.
Okay. Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So.
Oh, interesting. So it's like that's who that is there. Mm-hmm. Because it could be anybody. Okay, yeah. Cool.
So early frames were typically basic and like not carved or ornate or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just really simple kind of. And often the frame and picture were created on the same piece of wood. So you couldn't just pop the picture out or pop the picture in. At no point did they have the concept of separate frames. So nowhere. Oh. Like it just wasn't a thing. So the big thing in ancient times, again, is just these framing borders, right? So it's not mm-hmm. like a relief situation where it's like sticking out quite yet. It's just like painted around, you know, like with lines or like little floral motifs or whatever, or like even on a mosaic with tile. So you just create this border. So it's like an illusion of a frame, right?
Kind
of.
Right. Okay.
So you finally see more of these carved wooden frames in the 12th and 13th century in Europe.
Okay.
And the church was like a huge player in this whole thing.
Shocking. Because they didn't think frames were evil?
Well, we have to think of why art was produced in the first place, right?
Right.
And often paintings were religious, and it was these things, images would only be, they were probably expensive to make too, or like to commission, mm-hmm. right? So people aren't, yeah, in the ancient like Greek stuff and Roman times, they did like a lot of idyllic scenes.
Right.
So, yeah, they had their own art and everything, but still there was like some kind of, it wasn't just willy-nilly, oh, this is neat, let's.
Well, and a lot of it was because most of the population was illiterate. They couldn't read, right? Like, it was only, like, the rich people that could read and write and, like, people that were in certain roles that could do that. So if they had to convey anything to the masses with religion, mm-hmm. they did it in large part through images, right?
But quite frankly, a lot of the, and they would use statuary a lot for that, or like the reliefs on the buildings and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So it shouldn't be a surprise that picture frames kind of follow the style of what the rest of the artistic thing is. But at the time, like I said, if it's like statues or reliefs or murals, that was a funny slip. Romans and morals? I don't think so.
No way, man. Caligula says, no way, man.
But it's like the aristocrats and everything. They're the ones who have the money for all this, right?
Yeah.
It's not like Joe Schmo gets a mural in his house. He does, though. Okay, so yeah, going back to the thing of the religious thing, these images, they needed to have a prime location, right? Mm-hmm. You need to enshrine these things. Like, they can't just be, you know, like, you want the eye to be focused there.
Right.
So frame kind of makes sense to, like, literally be like, hey, over here, I'm important, right?
Yeah.
A lot of times there were just niches, too, within the architecture of, like, a temple or church or whatever, right?
Right.
So that acts as a frame in itself. A niche, in case anyone doesn't know, is just like a indentation,
like
I guess,
an indentation in the wall.
Yeah. So you can hang stuff in there, or
but you would think like, what if you've got a painting or something that doesn't fit in that neat, you know, like I can mm-hmm. see how then frames would develop to be like create that drama. Oh, maybe not.
Anyway, so still on framedestination.com, because come on,
framedestination.com, it's where it's at. So there's stuff.
The frame style of 12th and 13th century, remember, that's where we are. The hand-carved frames were used as part of a church's decor. So they were still meant to act as borders for whatever scenes are happening, but they were unmovable frames. So it was a part of the church's architecture. It was literally, like, I joked, it's a load-bearing painting. A load-bearing frame. Because it's like, kind of think of maybe crown molding style thing, where it's literally, and that's where the painting go, and that's it. You're not going anywhere painting.
Yeah, like there's no redecorating that church.
Yeah. So, just to recap, even though I just started, we had borders acting as frames, right?
Right.
Then we have architectural frames to highlight these like important scenes, right?
Okay.
And anything that had a frame, like these framed panel paintings, they were one piece. To explain how that works, our favorite magazine says the area to be painted was carved out, leaving of a piece of wood, right?
Okay.
Proper wood, right?
Yeah.
They'd carve out the thing, the center for the painting, leaving a raised framing border around the outside edge, kind of like, imagine a tray kind of thing, right?
Oh. Okay.
Or, you know, a picture frame, picture, whatever. The piece was then gessoed and gilded. Gessoed, usually, it's like where, it's kind of like when you prime your canvas.
Okay.
On a nice, smooth surface. Anyway, so after you gilded your frame or whatever, like when frames got fancy in the 12th and 13th century, the painting, you would paint the image last. So you did your frame, then you did your little painting. So
okay, interesting.
So the churches must have had a huge part in this whole frame history because they actually apparently also created or the first freestanding mobile picture frame. So still one whole piece.
Okay.
But they were the ones who, it seems, who started doing the, like you said, where, like, let's, like, get these pictures everywhere, right? Maybe we'll have one here, maybe here. And it could be because of, like, religious, you know how each holiday or whatever you call it,
mm-hmm.
important day.
Oh, yeah.
Right? They might be like, oh, let's get the Virgin Mary
nice
over here.
Let's put the Easter pictures up, you guys. Like, it's Easter or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Decorating.
Where's the Easter bunny?
Yeah.
So, but what about the shift from art and the frame? Like, when do they break up? Right? Yeah.
This just isn't working for me. I want to see other people. I want to see other frames.
So it turns out that doing frames this way was costly to do, probably because you're using like pretty good wood, especially for the churches, right? Because only the rich people are commissioning these things.
Right, yeah.
So to have to carve this piece of wood, can you imagine if you messed up? You're like, oh, man, you have to get another piece of wood.
Oh, my gosh, brutal.
You mess up the paintings, you have to redo the frame.
Yeah.
So a more efficient method was developed, which used mitered molding strips. These strips were attached to a flat wooden panel, which produced a similar result to the carved panel, but were more cost effective. And I'm thinking, but that can't be the only reason, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, kind of, yeah, I don't know. At this point in my research, remember, you're on this journey with me, you guys. I wandered off to have dinner. And when I came back, I fell down the New York Times time machine rabbit hole. I searched picture frames. I was good, you know, like,
yeah.
And it's fun going on the New York Times because I sign in through the library. It feels all official. Like, you know, when they would do, what's that thing called when you'd like the old heavy machine with the newspaper?
Oh my gosh, the microfiche?
Yeah, microfiche. Yeah. It kind of feels like that. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah,
ooh. Like I feel all official because I'm looking at an old newspaper. I'm pathetic.
It does feel official. It's fun.
But so yeah, like the New York Times thing, they sometimes have really good like timelines for things. Like that's where I got half of my sunscreen information from. I'm like, dang, thanks New York Times. And then I searched muffin tin. Then I searched muffin pan. So guess where I was going with that? I'm like, oh, I forgot to check for muffin tin.
Focus, Carla. Focus.
It's so me. Good. That's not. Then I saw an ad from a 1956 newspaper for Nescafe iced coffee, and my mind was blown. Right?
Whoa! 1956?
I thought iced coffee was like
a new
really
thing
new
for some reason.
I don't know why. I'm so dumb,
but like marketing and, it, like that's
yeah
seems new. I
even
don't know.
The fact that Nescafe was around, I'm like instant coffee, and of course they'd have instant coffee.
I could go for an iced coffee right now.
Right, I'm gonna make one after. So they just say to add Nescafe to cold water and then you add ice. I'm kind of like, I wouldn't be that good. Do it the way that we do it.
Or
it's the best way. You guys, I'm gonna give you my recipe.
Yes, do it.
Do you like how I'm fleshing this out?
Yeah.
Anyway, you put, it's kind of like that trendy thing that people were doing where you put like some sugar and the instant coffee and some water in a thing and you people whisk it for like 17,000 hours so they get a foam.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Put all those things. So like some sugar, a little bit of coffee and a good amount of water. Not that much, but like, and shake it in whatever container. And then put that in a cup over ice and then put like cream or like milk. Mm. Oh. And it's the best iced coffee you'll ever have. And you don't have to whisk for 10 hours. I promise you'll get
don't whisk a nice anything foam. For 10 hours.
No, it's stupid. So, yeah. Back to work. Okay, I found another pretty authentic sounding kind of site. I was like dying. You guys, it's so
Pictureframesrus.com?
Almost. No. It's actually an art historian named Laura Morelli. Yeah, she did an article called The History of Picture Frames. Ooh. So I wasn't really wanting to get into the whole like cultural thing of the time of like art patronage and blah blah blah. So whatever. Just deal with the fact that there were rich people and they were like, I want paintings eventually.
exactly what they sounded like.
So again, 12th, 13th century, they're still using wood panels for paintings. They're still religious, but slowly they're being commissioned for private chapels and domestic spaces as well.
Ooh. Right?
So we're seeing these paintings needing to actually move now.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So let's remember, this is the time of the massive Gothic cathedrals. Remember those?
Right.
From art history?
No. Yeah.
They were, okay, so we had cathedrals before, you guys, and basilica and that kind of thing. But these ones were higher, brighter, taller, larger, just more epic than any cathedral you've ever seen. Beautiful stained glass. And the whole point was to draw your eye forward and up where it was like, kneel before your God. Like, it's just supposed to be in awe.
God is here.
So, in ancient times, you know, we're framing things to create order and to kind of like, what's the word, like delineate between scenes, right? Like it's a, but now frames, guess what? No surprise here, follows the architectural drama and the message going on at the time, right? So these frames are also coming along for the journey where people are like, ooh, yeah, we're just gonna have simple wooden frames. Like, let's do this.
Yeah, we need to make this epic. Mm-hmm. God wants it that way.
Some of the framing, like some, even around some of the statues, weirdly, is like insane. Like, remember that, what, the famous one, oh, crud, I don't remember. Some saint, some female, Teresa, Saint Teresa maybe or something. And she's all like the ecstasy or whatever, remember? And then there's like those gold rays like coming out of from behind her. It was this whole epic thing. Altars were insane. Anyway. So some say that these fancy frames don't happen until the 14th and 15th century. But Laura Morelli, the art historian, actually says that this starts happening earlier, right?
Okay.
So woodworkers of the 1200s and 1300s constructed elaborate architectural shapes for multi-paneled paintings called diptychs, triptychs, and polyptychs, depending on the number of individual panels. These complex wooden forms were often based on Gothic architectural models. So, see, I thought Gothic came after. I didn't bother refreshing my memory. Whatever, you guys. Who cares? The point is, during those few hundred years, things were getting, ornate. And layers of wood were being glued and nailed together. So it was like building up. These frames are getting like, you know, inches thick, right?
Well, yeah, I think like just even just the idea of them following like what's happening in architecture. It's like if everything's getting bigger and like more elaborate and more like.
Exactly.
Everybody's like vying to be closer to God or whatever, like to prove that like.
Yeah. And hey, I have the power. I have the wealth because I'm.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you'll see that linen is now starting to be pasted down on these panels and stuff in case anyone wants to know. So I'm guessing, you know, like, but the whole canvas thing, do your own research, people. I don't care. We're talking about picture frames. So unfortunately, the carpenters who made the elaborate frames for the paintings, usually didn't get any credit for their work. I'm sure there were well-known ones known like to the inner circle, right?
Right. Yeah. But eventually, then they created their own magazine, and they gave kudos to each other.
Dang.
It is kind of crazy, though. I mean, like, you could look at it, like, some of those frames could be sculptures in their own right. Like, I'm sure that it was not easy to make those at that time, right?
Oh,
like,
for sure.
They were so ornate.
In fact, listen to this. Some of the, like, altar frames incorporated gold, gems, and mosaic inlays. As one article sort of said, like, to imitate the expectations of what would be found in the cathedrals of heaven. Whoa. Holy figures with radiating rays of gold extended from the focal point to the exterior rim of the frame, symbolizing the power of heaven on earth or something, right? So it was this whole...
Right. Wow. It was, like, epic. Every single thing that they did was, like, guiding people to, like, look at how great this is. Heaven's going to be awesome. Your life sucks hard now because we spent all our money on this frame. But it'll get better, we promise. We don't know, but we're pretty sure.
As if they'd promise. They'd probably be like, this is the way it is. You belong down there, peasants. And give us your money. Yeah. End of story. Okay, so we're framed separate yet. Not yet.
Whoa. Okay. Not yet?
So, trusty Laura Morelli asked the same question, which excited me. I'm like, when do you ever get this jackpot where it's like your exact question? She asks, so how did the frame become a separate entity apart from a painting? I'm like, yes, tell me, Laura.
Thanks, she says, Laura.
The Florentine Renaissance ushered in the idea of a frame as separate from a painted work, and Florence stood at the epicenter of this transition. Remember, Italian Renaissance is when we see the rise of art patronage extending beyond the church.
Right.
You've got the Medici family in there at some point.
Those Medici.
And you can bet they bought all of the art, all of the frames in the world.
Yeah. They had everything. Yeah, they were like the biggest family.
And you guys, they're a really, really, really fun family to research and study. Oh, so like go check them out. It's crazy. There's like a million TV shows based on them too, I'm sure. But so nobles were right in there with the Pope. They were all like, wasn't the Pope at Medici at some point? I don't even know.
So. It was like crazy. I think there were a few of them.
So they're like, let's get these fancy paintings into our homes here, you know, our estates, right? You guys, my head almost exploded. Morelli gives us a specific credit.
Whoa.
For when picture frame was separated from
painting. Whoa, how do we ever, when I do don't we ever know. Get that? That's okay. Awesome.
I'm skeptical.
Okay.
And only because I feel like there's this whole world out there. At some point, someone else could have easily.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we're not even looking at, like, any of the Asian cultures potentially in there, right? Like
exactly. Yeah. Although I feel like with them.
They did scrolls a lot.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of murals. And just their art is a little bit different. And even, like. Right. It's.
Like the woodcut stuff a lot.
Yeah. It wasn't, like, framing. And kind of a lot of things kind of floating in beautiful, like, spaces. Like the misty thing where it's, like, that ephemeral feeling. Not so much, like, anchored, like. This is it. Like, look here, right? Mm-hmm. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, definitely a different feel from the Christian influence, I think.
Ready. In 1423, Palla Strozzi or Strozzi, I don't know how to say it, a banker and at one time the richest man in Florence, commissioned Gentile di Fabriano to paint a version of the Adoration of the Magi. So in case anyone doesn't know, like the scenes from the Bible or whatever, like religious scenes were often painted over and over again, like in different ways, because that's all they basically were allowed to paint. The gilded panel painting was based on the medieval prototype of an architectural framework, but for the first time, the frame ended up as a separate elaboration from the painting. Over the next decade, other prominent Florentine artists contributed to the development of the idea of a frame as a separate work in its own right. Whoa. So we were seeing the gradual thing of like, oh, let's make these elaborate frames. But apparently this dude started this whole trend of like, well, let's just do the frame first. Who knows? It could have been anything. He could have been like, I want a fancy frame from this guy, but I want you to paint it. And then...
I would love it if, like, if it was something as simple as, like, some guy had, like, a piece of wood where he's like, oh, this would be perfect, and he started carving it, and they're like, I want that as the frame. And they're like, but how do we do that? Because it's not attached to a painting already.
Right.
And building it from there, you know?
Or what is most likely, I'm guessing, is a marketing scheme.
Probably, like, if we've learned anything from your story, podcast.
But then,
he's like, I can make money from this? Okay, let's double down. Or somebody else, like, somebody came up with that, some poor peasant guy, and then some marketer stole the idea from him.
The richest man in Italy.
And convinced everybody that they needed picture frames.
So I mentioned some of the fancy materials that were used to embellish frames. They also used ivory, pearls, tortoiseshell, precious metals.
So they just killed anything they saw and attached it to a frame.
Yeah.
And then just macaroni frames came along.
A turtle was just moving on the frame still.
Yeah.
The type of wood used became very important too. At first, most people used oak. They eventually turned to pine because it was cheaper, right? But frame makers, like the good ones, really know their stuff. I mean, it makes sense. Carpenters have to know what they're working with. So,
and they know what's easier or harder to carve and stuff, right?
Yeah. So, for example, walnut was prized for its rich color and structural integrity and was preferred for a frame with fine details or one that was left to show the wood grain. So a lot of thought went into this. It wasn't just, oh, grab whatever crap you can from IKEA and...
like my house.
Me too. I actually have to get some new frames from IKEA. Hi, IKEA. Can you, like, sponsor us? We love you. IKEA. We don't. Do we?
We don't.
Oh, yeah. They had that weird...
I mean, they're kind of my own show again.
Do you remember anything we talk about? I completely forgot I did an IKEA topic. I don't remember anything. You guys.
I remember because my mom listened to it and she's like, thanks, guys, for ruining IKEA for me.
Oh, no. And I was gladly buying Kellogg's cornflakes, skipping in the aisles of Costco. I'm like, okay, easy there, girl. Okay, so while the box style of frame, where all four sides of the frame were the same, they had other styles like the tabernacle style, where the top and the bottom are more elaborate than the sides, right?
Oh,
it's probably where you start seeing circle frames and all that kind of like. They would go nuts with like natural motifs, classical architecture details, because classical stuff started coming back, I think. But so whatever fancy pants stuff was going on with the frames, again, obviously it's reflected in the buildings, the furniture, fashion, everything. It's
right. Like,
that's what people do, right? Just remember, though, like back then, people took, like design meant something. It had to mean something.
Mm.
Symbolism was very important. It wasn't ever really designed for design's sake or art for art's sake. It was very much like it had to mean something. It had to add to this religious or political narrative, or like the power.
Yeah, like kind of thing. Was showing off for something for a specific reason of like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like so now we're think, so
oh,
used
thought,
to.
Oh, I think that looks good. I think that looks great. Everything had a meaning. So
yeah,
yeah. I guess people don't really know that. They're stupid.
But I mean,
I'm kidding.
Even me now, like it's so hard to like think that, like to imagine what I would do at that time because I just am like, this looks pretty. I'm putting it on the wall or whatever, right? Like, we don't ever think past that point because. I mean, we do to a certain degree, but only more just to show
our own
off.
Aesthetic in a way.
Yeah.
So we kind of want to create a message with art of like who we are.
Yeah.
But that's whole, like, what, like you covered, you know, some of the Enlightenment thing of like this me thing. That's...
It's the individual thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And back then it was so much like, what does this say about, you know, my place in this society?
Exactly.
And, how religious I am, like how close to God I am, how close to the politicians I am, like how close to all these things I am. And, you know, I can afford this, this, and this, but that means that you have a certain social rank and a certain, you know, political
in
rank.
Fact,
and this is team segue.
This
great.
Is amazing. This is amazing. You're like exactly spot on with the comments.
I'm on the journey with you, see?
You are, see? The types of frames and the materials used in the Renaissance were directly related to the people, like the people who commissioned the work, directly related to their wealth and power. So the more ornate or rich the frame, the more powerful the patron.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, like there was no such thing as like, oh, a modern, like basic style.
No.
Because that would be just be seen as like you're poor, you can't afford to do anything else, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So eccentric that.
Yeah.
But you didn't really. Yeah. So to round out just the earliest history of these picture frames, I'm just going to read a blurb from Wiki because it's nice and succinct, whatever that word is.
Mm-hmm.
Under the reign of Francis I, France's first Renaissance monarch from 1515 through 1547, art came to the forefront of daily life and flourished along with picture frames. Many workers came from Italy to the arts trade, including Leonardo da Vinci, whom Francis convinced to leave Italy in the last part of his life. Frames were now designed by furniture builders rather than the artist, sculptor, or architect as in the past. So Oh, and books on furniture and interior design were published and in distribution to a wider market than ever before. So already by the 1500s, we have people like,
wow,
where it's not about like religious stuff anymore. It's full on, let's make these castles and estates look beautiful, right?
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. That shift is really interesting to the furniture builders and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And if people were, artists were in demand, you know, and a lot of them had studios where they actually had like apprentices and other artists paint mm-hmm. the thing for them.
Yeah.
So a lot of like some, even some famous paintings weren't actually painted by the artists themselves, yeah. which is pretty crazy, right?
I love that. Yeah. It was kind of like almost like a factory line type thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the people had to be really good, but they trained. The apprentices
and people get
trained.
So outraged. They're still outraged by that. But I know a couple of like modern artists that are famous and they do the same thing actually. And I'm like,
oh,
you know, I feel like it's a fun nod to that old tradition. And
I like it. Yeah.
Why not?
It's so interesting though, because we're so trained to give full credit to just one person, right? Like,
we are.
It's the same thing with the inventors, right? Like Thomas Edison, didn't he have like all these guys working for him and like mm-hmm. inventing stuff, but it's his name that's on it.
Well, like look at architecture. The guy designs the thing, but he's not building it by hand. He's not hammering the nails. So
right.
that's how you have to look at these old paintings. It's the guy's vision.
Yeah.
But he gets somebody just to fill in some of that.
And they have trained underneath him. So it is almost that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's the same kind of thing as like a restaurant, right? Or like, look at like Hell's Kitchen. We've been binge watching it lately. But it's like, it's the chefs are trained by Gordon mm-hmm. Ramsay. So if you go to a Gordon Ramsay restaurant, he's not cooking it for you, but it's people
right.
that... like, it's his vision and it's his recipes and his
right.
like menu, right?
But if there's an... wealthy enough client or important enough client, you know that that artist is going to do it himself.
Right.
Or the chef is going to do it himself, right?
So right. Yeah.
Get what you pay for, kind of. By Victorian times, there was a growing middle class and demand for cheaper frames. There was a casting material called composition or compo that could be pressed into molds and added to a basic wooden frame. So carvers now shifted to like more of a mass produced thing, so they could carve a mold, but then just right, like easily
yeah,
make.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what time period is that?
Victorian times.
Okay.
Yeah. And the demand for carved wooden frames fell after that.
Okay.
Some artists were like rebelling against mass produced frames, and all the way up to like the Impressionists and everything, like. And even after that, where people were making their own frames, right? So it's
right.
kind of like there's a weird
yeah,
shift
yeah.
where frames were left to frame makers, and they kind of probably started separating from the image, like the meaning of the image.
Right.
right?
Yeah, so yeah.
Like these pastoral scenes, and people probably would be like, oh, I want a more like, you know, bronze color or whatever frame.
Yeah.
But then you have people like, I think it was Degas and like other people who were like, to hell with this. You need my frame.
Right.
Because it complements my artwork.
Because they still saw it as part of the whole mm-hmm. artwork, right? Like the
yeah,
whole piece
exactly.
together.
Presentation. That does matter with especially high art, right? Where
oh, for sure.
You can't just, you know, put it wherever. But
put an IKEA frame around a Degas.
Like, but is that, didn't he do a little statue? Was he the one who did that little ballerina statue?
Oh my gosh, what's yes. that? Yeah. I think so. I think that was Degas.
I just shoved a frame ballerina. On her head. Perfect.
Yeah. He did painting, so.
That's it. Picture frames.
Yay! I love that.
Can you believe they have their own little journey? Like,
everything
this
does.
This humble
though.
IKEA frame.
I love that.
That I'm holding up.
I love because it's like something that you didn't think was a thing, but obviously it had to evolve in its own right, right? Like, and to think
yeah.
that when they first came out, they were attached to the paintings. Like, that's crazy.
I know. And even
I
that,
love it.
We were obsessed with, like, yeah, making framing from like super ancient times.
Right? Yeah.
Borders, even, are kind of mind blowing, where I'm like, why do you care if there's a border? Just stick to your cave painting style.
But I think it is that thing of like
roaming wild and free. Yeah. Oh, order.
Right. Order. Yeah, and wanting to, like, make sure that people focus on the right things, right? Like, you're guiding
yeah, people are
their
obsessed
eye.
With order. It's pretty much
yeah.
why religion was made in the first place. Because they're like,
well,
we
yeah.
need to organize everybody.
Yeah, like,
get
power.
Get them under control.
Exactly. Everybody look here.
Yeah.
Do this, and then that.
Follow me. The guy
yeah,
in the square,
me.
That's me.
Yeah, this guy's just holding a frame around himself. Stare at me. That was awesome. Good job.
And that's it, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, guys. Remember, if you liked this episode or any of our other ones, to like, subscribe, or review, or and review, I should say. It's not optional. You have to do all. You can follow us on Instagram. We are at podcast.or.something, or you can write to us at podcast.or.something@gmail.com, and we will talk to you later or something.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, my voice cracked again.